Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us on the program. Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We archive the programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, seems appropriate. We also link to our guests. We'll be giving you the website or websites to our guests here in studio today. And we encourage you to go to their website and investigate, see if it resonates with you, and we hope that it does. As you know, this program has been going on for over 9 years, and we're so grateful to have the opportunity to come your way every week with a different guest, different topic, that all are going in the same basic direction, to find a better way of living, to foster more communication, if you will, more, we'll call it interpersonal relationships and so forth. And to that end, we have in studio Barbara Gahn-Mueller and Sig Whatley, and we're going to be talking about their books, and that's actually Sig Whatney, and Barbara's book she co-authored with two other individuals called Revolutionary Conversation, The Tools You Need for the Success You Want. And then Sig, his book is just entitled Sig. I want to welcome both of you to the program today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Richard, thank you very kindly for having us. I'm very pleased to be on with your fabulous radio station. And I'm here this morning to talk about my travels and so on.
Well, we're excited about doing that as well. Barbara, again, thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure. You know, my life is peace. And I wanted to combine Sig's book because he experienced so many horrors during the occupation in Norway. And my book is about how to have that conversation if you are experiencing something in your life that doesn't work. It doesn't have to be the Nazi invasion. It can be your neighbor that's driving you crazy. So, as we say, peace begins with each of us. And I thank you, Richard. You've been a good friend and a really good host.
Well, we're going to go both directions because both of you are intertwined, if you will, in the general conversation we're going to have today regarding evolutionary conversations and, of course, Sig's history and his book, talking about his life. But I wanted to let our listeners know about this whole aspect of evolutionary conversations. Evolution and conversation are close cousins. Both are process, and they embody each other. Evolution is the ongoing process of change, and if we want to consciously and intelligently change our social system, we need to talk together about it. The more inclusive, wise, and productive our conversations are, the more powerful and positive the changes will be. And it is no accident that the conversational dimension of our work is usually called process. Conversation is our way of being in process and evolving together. Now, given the many crises that are emerging today, high-quality conversation is an essential evolutionary force.
Boy, are you right, Richard. Revolutionary conversations. You know the book title that we have, it was tough to come up with an idea in a title because the title sells a book.
Yeah.
And your evolution of revolutionary conversations was right on. And so many people, we know how to talk when we're born or in a year maybe, let's say, but do we know how to have a conversation?
Yeah.
That's the question.
And it's a two-way street, and it's not just about sharing your ideas, it's about listening as well, but not just listening, not just hearing the words coming out of someone else's mouth, and also not just processing the words to begin the process of trying to formulate your thoughts before the person's finished. And these are techniques that we're not really taught as we're growing up. We're taught how to speak. I have to say that there's a comedian back in the 70s, and he's still alive today, who had this great line in one of his comedy bits where he says, you really want to mess up a child? Talk wrong around him. Mm-hmm. And he used this one example, Mamo dog face to the banana patch. Mm-hmm. I mean, just throwing words together that don't mean anything, that have no syntax whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And in a way, that's kind of what's been happening in our society, not just in the United States, but globally.
Yes.
That's why we have all these problems.
Yes.
Now, when I first set this interview up with you, I'm not forgetting you because your role in this is extremely important because the two of you are carrying on a legacy. But my question to you, Barbara, is this in regards to revolutionary conversations. And we have all of these different things that are happening around the world. How do you even begin a conversation with someone or someone's, a group, that is hell-bent on getting their way, forcing their ideology, whatever it may be, could be political, could be religious, could be economic, doesn't matter what it is. How do you get to the table to have that revolutionary conversation if you have that resistance and that dynamic?
It's very hard because you're emotionally charged. You have an idea that you think would be better, but you have to come alongside the person who is expressing their opinion at that point so that you can be heard. Until they hear you, you have to hear them first. And that's why I wrote the book. And you know, this is so common, Richard. It is just so sad because you have heard about violence in the workplace. It's increasing. They're not having conversations with employees. Their expectations are not being met because they don't talk. They don't have that conversation. What we did in our book was we gave people a very simple language that they can carry with them wherever they go. And that language is the first thing that happens when you are under emotion is you react. We teach people how to stop. That's the first step. Stop for a moment and be where you are. Sometimes it may take 2 days before you can go back to the conversation, but it might take only 5 minutes. And you might ask a question, which is the second part. Wait, I need a little help. I hear you are very, very strongly feeling this way. Can you tell me something? And you ask a question.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me? Sig and I do that all the time. As you know, we're in a relationship, and I'm always asking him questions. Sig, I heard you say this. What did you want me to do? What did you want me to know? It allows me to be clear. It's so easy to make an assumption about the person who's very angry or very opinionated, and you can stick with your opinion, but then peace doesn't occur. And that's why we wrote the book. I sat with my late husband, Robert Mueller, M-U-L-L-E, or I say that because a lot of people look him up on the internet. He was with the UN for 40 years, and he was a reason so much of the conversations at the UN produced peace. Mm-hmm. But there were many that didn't. And then I thought, well, what's the missing ingredient? And that's why I wrote the book.
Yeah, I have to think on two things. When all hell broke loose in 2001, okay, this is going back obviously 15 mm-hmm. years, two things ran through my mind. One is there's something wrong here. This isn't right. And it wasn't that the actions that were being taken were wrong. It wasn't that. It was there's something not right here. There's a missing piece of information we're not being told about what's happening, okay? Very tragic, but still there was a piece. It just didn't seem like we've got to thoroughly investigate this, but we didn't do that. We jumped and started just going crazy. The second thing was, over the course of the last 15 years, my question has been, has anybody made any attempt to sit down with any of these people who are so angry, so hell-bent on destroying, quote-unquote, our way of life? To find out and ask the questions that you are putting forth through revolutionary conversations.
You know, Richard, it is so complex, and I so appreciate you understanding the complexities. But that's why I'm president of the United Nations Association. If we don't have a united way to talk, let's assume, every fourth week of the month we have a meeting at the United Nations over at the University Club, and we talk. We have conversations. Mm-hmm. People have to practice having conversations. Can mm-hmm. we solve what happened in 2001? Can we hear what happened? Even if we heard what happened, we still have an awful lot of people who wouldn't believe it anyway. So I always say, yeah. Who are you with right now? Yeah. How can you bring peace to that moment? How can you listen and hear and be present so that peace can come from that conversation?
And even our political arena that we're in right now, prior to our election coming up in November,
right.
we have the same. If I'm not mistaken, we actually do have that exact same dynamic you just described, that even if you try to have a conversation, there are people who just aren't going to listen.
No,
they've already
not.
Made up their minds.
Yes.
And I'm going to use the phrase, they're hell-bent on whatever it is.
Richard, what I appreciate about you is I sit here and I see a very stable, peaceful man.
Thank you.
You are peace. Sig is peace. I can be peace wherever I am, I'll give you an example. Jane Goodall, who worked with the chimpanzees, I asked her a question. I said, Jane, I do an inspiring conversation, so I've interviewed a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Jane, you went into those chimpanzees, and they could have beat you up.
Yeah.
She said, yes, it took me time. That's the other part we don't put in conversations. We don't take that time. And she said, I became peace, and I sat still. I let them come to me. And remember when she said Graybeard came to her and started playing with her hair?
Mm-hmm.
She didn't move. She didn't give him a hand. She sat still. Sometimes that's all you can do is be that moment of peace for the person who will look at you and say, well, why aren't they reacting? Think about that reaction.
Yeah. Now, Sig Watney, whose book, Sig, and it's there is a bit of a subtitle. It's The Story of a Life, a Legacy. And you went through a period of time in our history in the 20th century. And again, every time I refer to the last century, it just sounds weird. Because when I was growing up, in the second half of the 20th century, I used to talk about, oh, yeah, things going on in the 1800s, you know. In the last century, now when I say last century, I have to be very specific, you know. And whenever someone asks me for my birth date, I always specify, I don't just say 60, 1960, because it could be 1860. I'm just an old guy. But you went
through. You don't
look it. Well, I appreciate that. But you went through, Sig, a period of time in our history that was extremely volatile and was, in essence, at least on one part of the globe, because there were two fronts going on. Mm-hmm. There wasn't just Germany. There was Japan.
Yep.
You had on the European side of the globe, you had an individual and a group that wanted things a certain way and weren't going to have any conversations about it.
Nope, it's true.
One of my questions to you as we get started here in terms of its impact on you is, how have you made peace with that group, that individual, and that experience?
It's very tough because I lost both my parents during that period. First, my father had, let me start from the beginning. I was born in Los Angeles and indeed went two grades to school, 52nd Street School in Los Angeles. And then my parents decided to go back to Norway, where they had emigrated from some years earlier. So on my journey back to Norway, my mother and I were transported on a Norwegian freighter. And about 3 days out of San Pedro, my mother and I used a swimming pool that a skipper had put up on his deck, foredeck, and a nice swimming pool. And my mother enjoyed diving and swimming, and I would grab, I couldn't swim yet, so I would grab the side of the pool as I jumped into it, and I missed one time. And I went right to the bottom. Luckily enough, the captain and the first officer were on duty up on the bridge, which was about 5 stories up, and they looked down, and there I was floating around down at the bottom of the pool. Out. I died. And that's the transition in my life that I'll never forget. And it's a very peaceful thing. It's very strange to say that, but I went cold black. And then the next thing, I woke up and I was laying on a hatch and they revived me. So that was my first experience with life in its full glory, if you want to put it that way.
So do you recall, I mean, you say it went black. That's all you're aware of between the time you hit the water and the time you were revived.
It was very peaceful. You think that you were fighting. Yeah, I was. Mm-hmm. Like normal life, I was crawling. I couldn't swim. So I was flailing about and just got full of water and went to the bottom. Mm. And I could see as I'm going out that my body was laying in the bottom of the pool and I was drifting off to hinterland. And then things went black. Okay. Very peaceful.
So pick it up from there as far as...
Then they revived me, and unfortunately, they left me there, and I got a heck of a sunburn. so much for our travels to Norway.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got enlisted in school, and first I had to learn Norwegian, and spoke then... English was, of course, my first language, and I picked it up pretty quick. As a kid, you usually learn a language pretty quick when you're with other kids in the street, and mm-hmm. you pick up the language. Anyway, then a sickness hit me, which was osteomyelitis. Osteomyelitis is a bad disease. It's a bone marrow disease of the long bones, particularly the leg bones and the arm bones. Unfortunately, my right knee got somewhat hampered by the sickness, and they had a hard time keeping it moving. Finally, one day, the doctor lost patience in bending my leg back and forth, and he unfortunately broke my knee into a whole flock of pieces. It grew back together, and consequently, the rest of my life, I've had a fused knee on my right side. Mm.
But you know, Sig, it's so interesting because your fused knee has never stopped you.
That's true.
That's the part I like. As I, you know, Richard, he's about to turn 90, and his life has been an adventure of working against the Nazis, creating a new life so that he could make it back to the U.S. And all of his stories in this book give people hope. I think mm-hmm. Sig's a life of hope. Can you imagine 3 years in the hospital, nobody visiting you? They all spoke Latin. It was a Catholic hospital. Did he give up? No. What is this about Sig that makes him a peacekeeper? Mm-hmm. He never gives up.
Well, now let me ask you about the doctor who lost patience, as you put it, and broke your knee.
Yep.
How do you feel about him today?
Well, he didn't know what he was doing. It was clear to me. I have never held that against him, really.
Okay.
Never have. That's not in me. That's just one of the things that happens. I have... I've done skiing. I skied a lot,
mm-hmm.
ski jumping. My father was an Olympian soccer player and an outstanding ski jumper. When we went to Norway, he built a ski jump in the Lake Arrowhead neighborhood. And on the first christening of the ski jump, he said, "Well, Junior, you're going to go with me." So he grabbed me. I put my skis inside of his. And we went up to the jumping hill, and we started down the upper run. And by the time we got to jump, my tears were running so badly I couldn't even see a thing. So we went over the jump, and everybody bravoed, and I had another experience behind me.
Well, I want to get back to my original question to you, but I'm gonna reword it just a little bit. In terms of, be it the doctor, you say you don't hold that against him, he didn't know what he's doing. But in terms of people you've come across throughout your life, including mm-hmm. during this tumultuous time of World War II, where you were in a Nazi concentration camp, from your perspective, what's the difference in our conversation here? What's the difference in your mind between having peace and forgiveness?
I never saw it as an act against me willfully doing so. It was strictly an accident on his part. So I never weighed that as against him.
Okay.
I never did see him again. But with the osteomyelitis, you get boils every so often, about every 3 months in my case.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1946, a doctor in a city in Norway, I was then in high school, and I had got a boil in my knee, and they put me in a hospital and lanced it and drained it. And the doctor, the chief of surgeon in that hospital in Oslo, I had heard of penicillin. And he took it upon himself to get long distance to call the chief of surgeons for the American forces in Germany. They conversed, and he opened the conversation by saying that I have this American kid here that had osteomyelitis, and I have read about your
penicillin.
Penicillin.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if we could do something. And so the conversation ended about an hour later with the guy, a doctor in Germany, and he said, I have 25 shots of penicillin on an airplane to you today.
Wow.
And so the next morning I got the first shot, and it was my job to keep track of which cheek was the last one to get it. And after the third shot, I could tell that the penicillin was working. And the osteomyelitis was on the way out.
Wow.
That was a turning life in my life, and it was one that I can never get so grateful over, that I just am amazed that it happened. My life.
Right. And I don't want to lose track of where we're going with this, but let me do a sidebar here, and that is, so in the last 10 or 15 or 20 years, knee replacement surgery has been a huge deal. And I know people who have had it, and
yep.
some have been very, very successful, and others not so much. But, you know, there's no guarantee.
Right.
Has this been something that you have looked into, and it's just not?
I have a hip that was put in by Dr. Payas, if I may say so.
Sure.
And that was 25 years ago. That
okay.
hip is still in place, and it's like, knock wood. It was just like, it's just like a new one.
So let's move forward in time as far as the events beyond the doctor and so forth to World War II. Again, the difference between peace and forgiveness in that specific context. Now, the doctor, there was no malice, you know,
no,
it wasn't personal.
Yep.
Whereas World War II, for a lot of people, that was very personal because their race or religion or lifestyle was selected by this group of people, by this individual, to be detained and or exterminated.
Yes.
That's pretty personal.
Yes, it is. And I was subject to the German Nazis when they invaded Norway in 9th of April in 1940.
Mm-hmm.
They came in, and they were pretty gruesome. They pulled no bones about. They were going to rule. Later on, I found out in reading stuff that they had a very good reason to occupy Norway, because Norway had developed heavy water, which they used in their fertilizer production, which was an item that Norway still lives on.
Mm-hmm.
The fertilizer is required for the atomic manufacturer of the atomic bomb.
Mm-hmm.
So that took its course, and the war started, of course, the occupation started, and I went through that losing both of my parents. My father was a casualty of war. He was on a Norwegian ship in the British Channel when he was bombed and lost his life.
Mm.
My mother died a year later of an infection, pancreas infection. And so I had to suffer along, but then penicillin came and that was saved me.
Mm-hmm.
From then on, I've had a great life with I had to find out an education for myself, as my mother was, I was 14 when my mother died. And I went on to become a radio operator in the Norwegian Merchant Marine, because they had the world biggest merchant marine in the world. I had gotten interested in radios, as during the war I would make radios for the people to listen to BBC, which was strictly forbidden.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed that. I became a radio operator and sailed for about 4 years everywhere in the world.
That's one of the things that attracted me to Sig, is he had been all over the world, and he became a global citizen through his travels.
Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, speaking of which, I have a website that is available to people if they wanted to literally become a global citizen. In other words, getting global citizenship. I'm not sure how widely accepted it is in every country on the planet, per se, as far as being able to travel on a visa, global, a world citizenship visa, but I know that that's available. It's a very interesting process and how it came about, but that's a story
for you. Are you talking about Gary Davis?
Exactly.
Gary Davis is my friend.
Yeah.
I interviewed Gary Davis. If you go to YouTube and put Barbara Gahn Mueller and Gary Davis, he came to my house on his last year of his life after Robert had died. And I said to Gary, what gave you that courage to sit between East and West Germany and sit on the river bank? He said, I want to be a global citizen. You know Gary Davis. Check him out, people.
Yeah.
He is worth checking out.
It's and that's a phenomenal story, too. But again, I still want to go back, Sig, because we haven't actually gotten an answer yet to the question of forgiveness versus peace in that specific situation. There was no forgiveness to give to the doctor, as you've explained.
Yep.
But here you have this situation where you lost your mother, your father.
Yep.
You were detained for how many years?
I was not detained very long.
Okay.
Because when my mother died, I went to live with an uncle and aunt.
Mm-hmm.
I then developed a little crystal set radio, which people could listen to BBC, which the Norwegians are famous for listening to the radio and finding out what's going on out in the world.
Right.
And so this crystal set was made on a roll of toilet paper and stashed in the toilet so the Germans couldn't find it. And consequently, every night at 8 o'clock, I was sitting on a potty listening to BBC. And I made about pretty close to 100 of those and passed them out to my friends very carefully, because there were people that were beholden to the Nazis for some reason.
They turn you in.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so I was very careful so I didn't get spoken of.
What about your feelings today of those people? Obviously, the German people of today, they're not responsible. They just happen to be the ancestors there, or the descendants thereof.
Right.
What about their ancestors back in the 40s? What are your feelings towards those people?
Oh, when the war was over, it was a bygone. It was a war, and let's have peace. And so that's how it started. And that's what's driving me these days for peace. Mm-hmm. There is no necessity for that. And I'm a peaceful man myself.
Well, there are more and more people, more and more organizations popping up all over the world and on the internet, websites and so forth, that are striving for that. And I've been hearing this for, 40 or 50 years, especially when working this Christian radio station back in Phoenix for 15 years and hearing about all these different things, then hearing about the only way that that's going to come about is through all of these various events. I'm going, on the one hand, is there something I can do to bring these events about so we can move on to that phase? But at the same time, I sit here today in 2016 and I'm going, is there a way that I can not have those things happen, and let's just go to that phase. Let's just find a way that we can communicate with one another, resolve our differences. As human beings, we'll probably always have conflicts.
We have that desire, don't we, to be heard and to listen?
Yeah.
And we have that desire to have that conversation. And sometimes when I'm speaking, I just got back from the UN where I spoke about the spiritual nature of the United Nations and how special it is when all these countries get together and have this conversation at the General Assembly. And there's so much respect, but it's almost like you have to have a time, a place, and the willingness to listen and be heard. And it's more than listening. It's coming alongside someone. You asked about forgiveness. It's the hardest thing in the world to do, but it's also the best thing for your body. If you forgive, you let go, and you open up the world of possibilities. In holding pain and holding unmet needs and when you hold all of that, you just don't have yourself, you aren't present. Even your digestion is disturbed. One of the speakers I interviewed for the World Peace Conference said, if it's the worst thing for these returning vets, their digestion is so messed up because they have so much anger and everything. Mm-hmm. They can't live a good life. And so Boone Cutler has a radio show every Saturday to people to allow them to listen to how you can become peaceful when you are a returning vet.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, there's so much we could talk about, Richard. We could be here for 2 days talking about I don't even know you. I didn't know you knew Gary Davis.
Yeah.
I sat where he had his tent. We're just so fortunate that we have history to guide us.
Yeah.
We can't repeat the mistakes of the past, Richard.
But that's the struggle that we have, is that we seem not to be observant of history, and we do seem to keep repeating it.
We do. I asked Robert once, Robert was my late husband who was at the UN, I said, why is it when we've had the Gandhis, the Robert Muellers, the peacemakers, let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me, why is it? He said, because we're human. We're human. And to be anything but human is hard. It's really hard. I admire you, Richard, because you said, why can't we? Because you're doing a radio show. Your radio, I could tell you, Martin Luther King said, my people would not have had opportunity if it hadn't been for radio. They had no way to become educated. And I think radio still has a huge place on the planet. And I thank you for bringing peace out to the people who are listening. And I say television, too, but radio gives you a chance to close your eyes, say, what's really going on here?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. And the goal of this program, of course, is to put out the various perspectives and ideas and ways of living that will foster a lifestyle not of consuming and producing on and over and on infinitum, mm-hmm. but of thriving. Mm-hmm. Not surviving, living paycheck to paycheck, but going beyond what we've been doing, because we've been doing the same thing for centuries. And it's like, why hasn't the human race gotten tired of this? Why hasn't the human race said, we want to try something else? And I even put out the statement to those, especially when talking about the economy. Who said that this was the only way that the economy, using that word, had to be? This is plan A, and for whatever reason, we've chosen to stay with plan A.
We get a little stuck, don't we?
Oh, my Lord. And then when I hear the financial news reports about the numbers, well, if the numbers are down, people aren't happy. I understand that. I don't like it when my numbers are down in my bank account. But even when the numbers are up, they're still unhappy. So my first question to them is, what numbers would make you happy? What numbers would make you happy? This is an interesting conversation. We're going to dive over to Barbagon Mueller here in just a moment. We're going to take our short break here. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. We're talking with Sig Watney and Barbagon Mueller. We're talking about peace. We're talking about forgiveness. We're also going to be talking about some other areas as well. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I appreciate your staying with us here on the program as we talk with Sig Watney and Barbagon Mueller and their role in bringing about peace on Earth. And we encourage you to investigate and research all that you can in that regard, whether you go to the websites we're going to mention here in just a few moments, the ones we'll be linked to at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and also a special event that'll be coming up at the end of October we'll talk about in just a couple of moments as well. Barbara, you have already made reference a number of times to your late husband who was with the UN, and what I find interesting, and I'm not sure if maybe you have done this, but what's really very fascinating is when you take a look, and you can only do it down the road a ways, at the path someone has traveled, it's like it all just makes sense to be where you are today and to have gone through all of the things that you've gone through. It makes sense to be where you are. And the same thing with Sig, you know, in terms of having the perspective, for example, Sig, that you have towards people who were less than kind to you and your family. And yeah, you kind of say, well, that was war and let's just move on here. And I'm not a fan of getting into conflicts myself. I just, you know, it's like, okay, let's not go there. In spite of the fact that there are times when, and I will do this with friends, I will muse with them about what I'd like to do to sort of get that out of my system so that I can then go over there and deal with that dynamic without the aggression and the agitation and the frustration and the resistance.
You're lucky to have friends that listen to you at that time. One of the best ways for us to sometimes get rid of the pain inside is just to talk. The returning vets, they say if they have a loving environment, they just let them talk. Don't solve their problems. Just listen. Just be there and maybe ask a question now and then. I looked up the definition of peace, and it's a state of harmony. It's friendship. We need it everywhere. And you're mentioning all of these things that make so much difference. My late husband was Dr. Robert Mueller, and that's how I met Sig. We had gone to a Rotary function. We're both Rotarians. I became a Rotarian in 1985 when they started letting women in, and I said, oh, boy, I get to be a Rotarian, which was my dream. And so then Sig's wife died the same year my husband died, and we just had this conversation. I think destiny finds you as you're on your path to doing something. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Destiny is there. People ask me, well, how can you be so peaceful when the world is so messed up? And I said, yeah, I know that. That's information. But I choose to work on the world I want. My late husband wouldn't have gotten to the United Nations if he didn't have a dream of being a peacemaker.
Yeah.
Even opposition. His dad said, oh, I pity you, young boy. You're never going to make any money. There's no such thing as a peacemaker. And he's in the poorest part of Alsace-Lorraine. And he said, no, Dad, I'm going to work for peace because I hate the way the Germans and the French are shooting each other. I saw you change nationalities 5 times. You changed German-French uniforms. Dad, I'm not going to do that. Okay, 5 years old. How's he going to become a peacemaker? The United Nations Association, when he was at the University of Strasbourg, had a contest. The prize would be an internship at the United Nations, the newly created United Nations. When he saw that on the bulletin board, he said, that's for me. And he sat down and wrote that essay, how would you run the world if you had the power? And he won the contest. Shipped off to the United States, internship at the UN, not a word of English. Did he refuse to go? No. His destiny found him. 40 years later, he started the University for Peace in Costa Rica when he retired. Never gave up. Died at 88. Wrote 7,500 ideas and dreams for a better world. We have Good Morning World every morning, an email with his beautiful sayings. We never give up. Don't give up and focus on the world you want.
Wasn't it Churchill who actually uttered those words, and actually it was repeated 3 or 4 times, never give up, never give up, never give up, never
when
give up.
When do you give up? And you remember his answer,
yeah,
never,
never,
never.
Yeah,
never.
Exactly.
Right.
And that's why Sig's still here. He's going to be 90.
Yeah.
You asked what keeps me on the track.
Yeah.
I am pursuing the fact that peace starts with me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my motto, and I will proceed on that course to convert people or try to live the life of peace.
You know, I had the distinct privilege of interviewing my parents last year in August prior to their 60th wedding anniversary, and they're in their 80s. And I remember when my dad turned 70, and we were sitting at the dinner table, and I asked my dad how it felt to be 70. And he had has a great response. He says, well, I didn't expect to live this long, but I am glad to be here.
Good.
And, of course, we celebrated their 60th this past June. We were able to fly back to Phoenix for the day and spend the day a little time with our family and my parents and everything. And it was just great. And my baby sister, Mary, she had a great speech, which seemed to be pretty impromptu, and it was really well delivered. And basically talked about the legacy that these two have left behind. And she says, if you want to know if you want to see the legacy that they've left behind, just look around the room. There were like 35, 40 people there. I had my sisters, and my brother unfortunately wasn't able to make it. One of my sisters, well, actually, two of my sisters, they had their children there. And one of the daughters, my oldest sister's daughter, had her daughter there. So I'm a great uncle. My parents are great grandparents. And so we talked about this in the context of the interview, about a legacy, leaving behind something of importance, of significance. And I think about that. I used to think about that a lot more. What are we? Yes, it's important what we're doing now. What the two of you are doing now is extremely important. Mm-hmm. What do you think is going to be here when you two are gone? I mean, what is it? Or maybe a better way to phrase that, what are you hoping your legacy will be?
I hope I empower people to be who they are. I hope my legacy is it's not what I said or what I did, but how I made you feel, that you were an important part of our evolution and you were part of our solutions to our problems. Peace seems so far away and it seems impossible. So if I do anything, I just want people to realize they too can have a part of this. You don't have to be a multimillionaire or a great spokesperson for the United Nations. Be who you are. And you become that peace. I hope that the people I meet become part of the solution to the problems we face today.
Yeah. I mean, you, in a manner of speaking, you, Barbara, are Robert Mueller's legacy.
Thank you.
And even though the two of you don't have any children together, as far as I'm aware, you're sort of creating children out of the people that you meet along the way. As you've kind of stated.
When I married Robert, I instantly got 9 grandchildren and 4 children. So I have 9 stepchildren and 4 grandchildren, 4 stepdaughters, sons. Everybody you meet, whatever you do, wherever you are, if you're in the airplane, the grocery store, each person, you can make them feel that they're important, that I'm glad you were born.
Yeah.
I always put that in birthday cards. I don't just say happy birthday. I just say, I'm really glad you were born, and I'm so delighted I know you. What do you think, Sig? Do you think there's something that we're going to leave?
I was just going to ask Richard. Now you see why I am drawn to Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
She's so fantastic, and I just hope that I can be half as good.
That's very kind, Sig.
My life and getting people to follow the golden rule, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes I wish I could say, don't squander your opportunities for peace. They're there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's in the grocery store. When I see a lady and a little boy screaming at each other, I will go to the lady and I'll say, you have the most beautiful child. And all of a sudden she stops. This is her child she's screaming at.
Yeah.
What kind of a image is she giving to the world, and what kind of image is she giving to the child? Sometimes it's your words. Words can bring peace.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah, it is said that you can take 10 years to build a person up, and you can, in 10 seconds, undo all of that.
Right.
And then it's going to take another 10
right.
years. It's one of the things that I observed many, many years ago as I was meeting women along my path who were damaged. I mean, you know, that was sort of the phrase back then.
A lot of women are damaged.
And I thought, you know, and then I started to
feel, they accept that damage as part of who they are, and they're not that.
That's not
That is not who you are. Yeah. If I could do anything, I would give people that magic wand to say, you are so special.
Yeah.
Remember that. Look at the miracle. Look how many sperm didn't get with the ovum, as we say in biology.
Yeah.
And you're a miracle.
Just strictly by doing the math. By doing the numbers, you're absolutely right. You are unique.
Mm-hmm.
There was a book that I recorded back in 1982. It was by an author by the late Og Mandino, called The Greatest Miracle in the World. And it talked about the uniqueness of individuals. I mean, it went down this litany of ways in which this is done.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And the book was about what they call rag pickers. And it wasn't necessarily gathering up the rags, but the refuse of the human refuse, if you will, that we've thrown away, the human beings that we have pushed away, the elderly that we put into homes, and we've got the homeless, and we've got children that, you know, and I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And so this book talks about how you can become a rag picker, and you can help someone to get on their path, get on their purpose in life, you know, because we all need a helping hand from time to time.
Wow, I love that.
Yeah.
To get out of the muck.
Get them out of the muck and the mire. And a lot of times, yeah, maybe it was of their own doing, but that doesn't abdicate our responsibility to our fellow men and women, to our fellow human beings. I think that's one of the things that is so interesting. We talk on this program about how there is a lifeboat. It will hold 7.5 billion people. And there's only one condition for getting on the lifeboat. You have to be willing to let go of the old ways of doing things because they don't work.
That's a great title for a book, Richard. Be willing to let go. Dr. Henry Oster, who survived the Nazis and was one of the last from the Holocaust, said, I said, how did you do it? He was just on our global e-club for the Rotary. Mm-hmm. And he said, I had nothing. Therefore, I had nothing to give up. And I just could be present. And he said it was just being present and not evaluating where I was, not saying, oh, damn, I'm here.
Yeah.
No, he was present to whatever was.
Yeah.
If he had to clean the corral with all the horses and the cows, he cleaned the corral. He didn't say, oh, I wish I weren't here. It's being present to whatever life gives you.
You know, we talk about choices on this program and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And I have to say that one of the incredible choices, including the example you've given, is that of a gentleman who he initially was in a life of violence to try to get his point across, to try to change the society in which he lived. And then he was imprisoned for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about, and I haven't read his book, but I'm aware of this conversation because I've seen some interviews with him, where he made the conscious choice to go one way versus the other. And he could have gone down the road of pessimism and self-destruction, but he didn't. And of course, you probably know who I'm talking about, Nelson Mandela.
I knew you were going to say that.
He made the choice.
Yes. Yes.
And that's one of the things that I try to tell people, and I'm just about finished with the book, as a matter of fact, in terms of writing it, that I've been working on for 15 years. And that is, it doesn't matter where you are, you always have choices. The question is, do you know how many choices you have?
Mm-hmm.
The analogy that I use is of an individual who is walking in down a road and the fog has dropped down and all you can see is the white line on the shoulder, and they tell you just follow the white line, you'll be just fine. Everything's going to be okay. And you will be. And you've been doing that for years and it's been fine. You've been fine. And all of a sudden the fog lifts and you see a fork in the road going off to the left.
Mm-hmm.
Or could be off to the right, either way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can choose to either stay there, which is fine, or you can say, you know, I'm going to explore. I'm going to go over here and see what's out here.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, and I put this in the context of our educational system, the problem is that we are not taught or shown that we have multiple choices. As a matter of fact, in many instances, we are discouraged and even punished for choosing other choices other than the one that our parents, our institutions of education and religion and politics and economy and on and on and on tell us, this is the only way. Really? I'm not believing that.
Boy, am I appreciating your words. I'm an educator, and Sig, I think, is as brilliant as he is because he spent 3 years in the hospital without any education. I think that's where your creativity comes sometimes. It's not from people telling you how to think, but giving you the opportunity to think.
Exactly.
I hear many stories of people who say, the minute I've heard people, I don't even know how many people have said, I'm not going to college because I don't want to be programmed. I want to live.
Right.
I want to think.
Right.
And so there's a lot of choices out there. But I don't think we're giving people the economic opportunity so that they can raise their children without having to go to work every day.
Yeah.
They can get an education without being financially in debt for the next 40 years. We're not giving people the opportunity to be who they are. And if I had my dream would be that the economics on this planet would support us. We have enough money for all of us. We have enough money to live a life with our family and then raise your kids, be home, be a family. And then when they're gone, then you go to work. I mean, we got it all backwards. Yeah. I would have loved to live in a retirement home at the height of my career. I didn't have time to cook. I didn't have time to clean.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got it all backwards. We have to rethink, as you said. Let's rethink everything.
You know, and it's also been said that there's a shortage of this and there's a shortage of that. There's not enough of this and there's not enough of that. And I think specifically, for example, of clean drinking water. When I hear that, I'm going, no, that's not the problem. It's the distribution. There's more than enough. There is more than enough. And if we would also learn how to collect it. Mm-hmm. When it rains, do we collect that?
Oh, yeah.
I saw this incredible non-mechanical, non-energy-using desalinization process. And it was up around Norway that I saw this on the internet. It's the you remember those plastic ring dealies that hold together six packs of soda or beer, what have you? You remember those?
Of course.
All right. Well, this was four. And what it was these four rings. And on each of these rings was this big plastic dome. And there's a trough in the ring. And you put this big clear plastic bubble, if you will, out over the water, and the sunlight goes through that and heats up the interior, causing evaporation, and then the condensation down the sides of the interior of that plastic dome, down into that trough, okay? And then that liquid, which is, by the way, devoid of all of the minerals because they're heavier than the evaporated H2O, goes down in that trough, then to a central pipe, and then to a storage tank or whatever, a ship or onshore.
That sounds beautiful.
And it can be moved from place to place. It doesn't have to stay in the same place.
Wow.
We have the, and I understand.
But you're a seeker. You're going to seek solutions. You're a seeker.
Yeah.
Everybody has that power, but we sometimes forget about that and we get caught up in what isn't working rather than solution seeking.
Yeah. Right.
And maybe the solution is going to be something we never thought of before. There's a couple of new programs on YouTube, which are a shot of inspiration. They're showing what people are doing. When the little girl saw these homeless people not eating, she put a little thing out on Craigslist and said, I saw so many homeless people without food. Would you like to help? She got over $20,000 in 2 weeks. A little girl, 5 years old.
Yeah.
I don't think we have to wait for the solutions. We are part of the solution.
Absolutely. You know, and of course, a lot of people are going to be skeptical. Going, are you sure that's a five-year-old? Are you sure that's
her
really?
Her picture was there.
Well, I understand, but but that's where it's like, okay, if you're skeptical. All right, fine. Then take that which you were going to donate before you became skeptical and convert it into that which will help in your neighborhood, in your community. This is actually the first time I have ever shared this, literally. And I don't use the word literally.
Groundbreaking, right here. You heard it now.
I was in the McDonald's a couple of months ago, and I was getting my lunch. And of course, on State Street, as we all know here in Santa Barbara, this is where our homeless seem to congregate and do what's called the panhandling and asking for food or money or coffee or whatever. And I got my lunch, and when I was finished, I just had this intuitive gnawing at my brain saying, why don't you go ahead? You don't have to buy Big Macs or anything. Why don't you go ahead and for $10, you can get 10 just regular hamburgers, okay? And just take them out to one of the people that's out there and say, why don't you share this with some of the other folks here that you associate with, what have you. And so I did. And the guy, he was grateful. He said, thank you, and grabbed the bag and ran off. And that's fine. I mean, if he kept it for himself, that's fine. At least somebody was able to utilize it. But if that's all we do, if that's all we feel comfortable doing instead of going and seeing this thing on Craigslist or some other Kickstarter or whatever the things are. And
exactly.
We're, again, because we all know that there are people out there that are going to take advantage. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So put the skepticism aside. do it yourself. And it doesn't have to be.
But we
huge.
Have found the cure for depression is being of service.
Yes.
If I'm not happy sometimes, if I have that moment of unhappiness, I'll go out to the grocery store and I'll talk to the clerk. Just talking to another human being and saying how lucky I am that you came to work today and you're so cheerful makes me happy.
Yeah.
And I think Einstein's the one that said, I can't tell you how to solve the world's problems, but I can tell you how to be happy. Be of service.
Gentleman was walking through a parking lot this morning as I was coming into the station, and he said to me, he says, you want to exchange hats? Now, I didn't know he was talking to me at first. And he said it a couple of times more, and no, I don't. He said, oh, really? I know. I'm keeping my hat. Thank you very much. And I left it with a smile.
Uh-huh.
Okay. You know, even though I wasn't going to give him my hat.
Well, you got a great hat.
Because I didn't want his yellow baseball cap. not my style. But again, I didn't ignore the man.
No, you paid attention. And that's what I do with the homeless. I'll ask them how they are. You know, you can have a conversation with anybody if you just remember that they're a human being.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's important. You know, Richard, you said in the beginning we were going to talk a little bit about the United Nations Association.
Yes.
And you know, we are an arm of the United Nations, and there's a lot of hope at the UN these days, even though there's so many things that may not be working. And we're about to get a new Secretary General.
Yeah.
And we're hoping for a woman. Ban Ki-moon has been there for two terms, and his term ends at the end of this year. And so I'm thinking, what is it that, why did I start working with the United Nations Association? There are 120 of us around the globe, and we're associated with the United Nations, really trying to be the local voice for the global. And recently they did a world survey that ended up with the SDGs, Sustainable Development Goals for 2022. And I'm working with Occidental College, and we're working trying to get our nonprofits aware of the goals that Secretary General came from this world survey.
Mm-hmm.
Long story short, if they go to unasb.org, they can find out a lot more about the Sustainable Development Goals. We have a daily feed that allows people to know what's going on at the UN. They don't have to have a newspaper. They just go online and go to unasb.org. And then we have our e-club for Rotary, so they can go to Rotary e-club of worldpeace.org. There are so many resources out there.
You're also a member of the Rotary Club, and they've accomplished something that you wouldn't have thought would ever be accomplished in our lifetime with one specific disease, and yet we have so many that are out there. There are many people who feel like all of these diseases could be taken care of if we just focused. But in some instances, and unfortunately this is where the skepticism comes in, some of these diseases and conditions, if you will, they're too big a moneymaker for the organizations that are doing their thing to cure it. Because if they cure it, then all these people are out of business. And it's like, well, wouldn't that be a nice thing? Then you could go off and do something else. You know, I think about 2008, 2009, the economic crash, and all of the people, hundreds and thousands of people that lost their jobs. And the first thought that came to my mind was, I wonder how many of those people hated their jobs. They hated their jobs. They couldn't stay. This is what their family did. Hey, my dad did this. My grandfather did this. My great-grandfather did this. This is a family business. This is what we do.
But very good point.
They hated it.
Yeah, it's a good point. And you know, said something really strongly in the beginning. You were beginning to talk about, what were we talking about? I don't want to lose that point he's making. You were bringing something up about our jobs, our economy. Can you remember? Anyway, it'll come up.
Yeah. It's one of those things where when we have these various choices, these possibilities, mm-hmm. these opportunities to do something else.
Oh, it's polio. I wanted to tell them Rotary eradicated polio. We only have two countries left. And their next one, you know, there's 34,000 Rotary clubs around the world. It was started by Paul Harris. Our Rotary Club that I'm a member of in Santa Barbara is the one Sig's a member of, and they're having their 100th anniversary. You know, Rotary is there because we are of service. It's a little bit awesome to see the people who go to the Rotary Club. I'm just blown away by the work that they do. Our Rotary Club just got back from Guatemala, where they were building cisterns for clean water storage for the Guatemalans. Mm. And you should see these beautiful little children who are so appreciative of the fact that we came there to work with them and help them.
Well, there are so many people around the world who need so much help.
Mm-hmm.
One of the frustrating things that I remember seeing in 2005 mm-hmm. with Katrina.
Yeah.
You know, as heartbreaking as all of those scenes were, the most heartbreaking was seeing people on the roofs of homes screaming for help. And one of the thoughts was, you know, I would love to be able to do that, but what are you doing for you?
Mm-hmm.
How are you helping you? What have mm-hmm. you done to prepare for these kinds? We knew it was coming, and this is just one instance.
Here, like the earthquake's about to happen.
Right. We live here on the Central Coast, right?
Right. Well, I live on the fault. That's the way it is, the San Andreas Fault.
Yeah.
We all live on it.
Exactly. And so we choose to live here. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. knowing that. On top of that, we mm-hmm. also have high risk, especially going into year 5 mm-hmm. of this drought, of wildfires.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Talk about it.
But then I got to thinking, oh, gosh, where could I move? I don't have to deal with all this stuff. There is no place where you can move to avoid all of these things.
No.
You will just have different things to deal with.
Yep.
So you have to do the best you can to prepare the very best you can and know that.
Be resilient.
Be resilient, be resourceful, mm-hmm. and understand that if people could get to you, they would. But you have to do something for self as well. And what is the first rule of survival?
Take care of yourself first. They do it on airplanes. You put your headphones on, put whatever it is, the oxygen mask, and then take care of your children. It's really important what you're saying, Richard, and that's why I love your program, because it allows us to see the possibilities. It doesn't say this is what you're supposed to do. It gives you the opportunity to see the possibilities. What if we live the life that we were destined for with our birth? What if we lived a life that stayed in a state of harmony? What if we stopped that horrible thoughts? You know, some people rock around with thoughts that aren't so pleasant. What if you changed your mind and said, what a gift I am to the world. What a gift I am to my relationship. What if you had a relationship with somebody and you said, I'm going to make this work today, and here's what I'm going to do. You know, it's up to us to make our lives work.
You know, that's a very interesting point you make. And it leads me to a series of questions that I pose to my guests as we are approaching sort of the end of our program. And again, as you said, we could talk for 2 hours on this and still just barely scratch the surface. First of all, how can people get in touch with you?
Oh, thank you. My email is really easy. It's Barbara, B-A-R-B-A-R-A, at rain.org. Sig, you want to tell him your email? Sigurd, S-B-A, S-I-G-U-R-D, S-B-A, at gmail.com.
Okay. Gmail.com.
All right. He doesn't get to email himself often, no wonder. That's my problem. I'm always emailing him.
What about a website in terms of Revolutionary Conversations?
Oh, thank you. It's revolutionaryconversations.net. Revolutionary conversations with an S.net. Also, both of our books are available on Amazon. We both are part of the Kindle generation and can be read free if so desired. Today, I have to go to the post office. His review just came out in the Norwegian American Journal, and we're starting to get the people who are reading it around the world about a life lived well and a legacy for his children. He's going to be 90 October 1, and you're invited to his party, and we'll tell you more later.
Absolutely.
But we are the firm believers that with the 34,000 Rotary Clubs, 120 United Nations associations, the United Nations, we have organizations that can help us achieve the peace we believe is possible.
Yeah. Well, before I let the two of you go, first of all, thank you so much for joining us here on Tell Me Your Story. It's been a pleasure to have you and converse about this. And again, we could go on for hours and still cover new territory. And as I ask these questions of the first person, the second one is going to be able to think about their answer, which is just kind of the way that it goes. So I'm not going to have you leave the room and the other person answer and then come back again. So I'll start with you, Barbara. Who is Barbara Gunn-Mueller?
I think what I am is a grandmother, a mother, a speaker, an author, and somebody who believes that peace is possible.
Sig Watney.
Uh-huh.
Who is Sig Watney?
Sig Watney is a somewhat lost in the world as far as heritage and all of that stuff. Yet I enjoy life, and I am very optimistic as far as the future.
And we'll now turn the tables a little bit. Sig, what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I hope to achieve that we have peace on earth and goodwill to men, as they say, in the near future, and work on that. And I think I have a job for the rest of my life.
And Barbara, what do you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I hope that I can make people aware of how important they are, how important I am. I hope we can have the respect that allows us to have the conversations that can bring us into a new reality of peace. And again, I'm going to go back to the United Nations founded 1945. You know, it's our global voice. And if you can support something that you truly believe in and bring your energy of service and then we will have the kind of community, the kind of state, and the kind of world we want.
And Barbara, what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose is to be love. I love whoever I'm with. I love the people. I love the books. If we can just come, like Mother Teresa said, the reason we have war is we forgot we belong to each other. So my purpose is to love. Love even harder when things aren't right.
And Sig, what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose is to make a good society, a clean society, and be happy in the process and spread happiness.
Barbara, I'm going to have you give out that website one more time for our listeners.
For the United Nations Association, it's unasb.org. For revolutionaryconversations.net, and for the Rotary Club, Rotary E Club of World Peace. May peace prevail on earth.
I want to thank you both again for joining us on the program, and we will have you back again in 2017 to continue this conversation, especially as we get closer to 2020. There's another organization called A Year Without War. 2020, and we're going to have those folks on as well to talk about their vision and their goal for the future. So thank you so much for joining us.
It's been our pleasure.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. A reminder that if you are just tuning into this interview, it's a lot longer than just the radio broadcast. We encourage you to go to the website, richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. You can hear the entire interview. It goes on for quite a while, and so we encourage you to check that out. Again, until next time, love Talal.